Looking to keep up with recruiting trends and headlines? You're in the right place. Welcome to Career Crossroads, the premier talent acquisition community with your host, Chris Hoyt and Jerry Crispin.
So I've got Robin Erickson here, who is Vice President of Talent Acquisition Engagement and Retention Research at Burson by Deloitte. Deloitte Consulting. Robin, you and I have been friends for years. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. It's great to see you. And in fact, I don't know if you remember this, but we've been friends since I stalked you at one of the candidate experience symposiums.
I was not aware that there was any stalking, but I am...
Well, you know, you were at my table and I wanted to talk to you, and we talked about a case study at your former employer, and...
I remember.
I was looking out for you, yes.
I do remember that. I've loved being connected with you. It's been a really long time. I love the work that you do. But between Deloitte Consulting and Burson by Deloitte, I think you've been at this type of work for probably close to 10 years now?
Yes, I've been at Deloitte Consulting for 10 years. I joined right after finishing my PhD in organizational communications, and then after 5 years of being a consultant in the talent strategy practice, I was given the opportunity to move over to Burson after Deloitte acquired Burson. And it's been awesome. I really have loved being an analyst and learning in depth around talent acquisition, engagement, and retention.
So I think what's really interesting about the type of work, or at least the people in our industry, and you know, we laugh about this all the time, I have bumped into you more, I think, and I live in Texas, you live in Illinois. I feel like I bump into you more in Paris than I do Chicago because of all the travel, and now we're coming in and out of conference season, and it's pretty crazy. You get to travel quite a bit still for the work that you do?
I am, and it's been very fun to meet up with you. It sounds very glamorous to say that we meet more often in Paris than we do anywhere else. But yes, we just finished a roadshow of our most recently published high impact talent acquisition research, started in January and finished at the end of April. And very excited to be talking about it. In fact, I think we have a webinar coming up in a month or so.
We do. I think that's exciting. That's going to be great.
I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to share our research with your members, and we found some really interesting stuff. So that's been definitely top of mind for the last 4, 5, 6 months, but excited to have this chance to speak to you today on a different topic.
Yeah, and one that has not been top of mind for you, but that Jerry and I felt was really pretty of an interesting topic, and it's some research you've been doing since 2016 all the way through currently to 2018. It was a publication or a piece but research that's come out titled Calculating the True Cost of Voluntary Turnover and the Surprising ROI of Retention. Can you give me a little bit of background on this? And then we'll talk about a couple of things that sort of stood out to me as I went through it.
Sure. Well, actually, I've been working on this topic for probably almost 18 years.
Wow.
I know. It's a long time. I started looking at retention when I was getting a master's degree in communication while working at another consulting firm. And it was right after the 9/11 disaster and all the layoffs. And I wrote a paper for a professor around the fact that the organization I was working with would experience a resume tsunami once the economy was no longer depressed, simply because of how they were treating people. And sure enough, that's what happened. And I then parlayed that into a PhD program. So my PhD actually looked at the retention of downsizing survivors.
Wow.
When I joined Deloitte, I created a retention service offering, and we created a voluntary turnover calculator, and we started looking at this issue of retention. So then when I came to Burson, it's a topic that I picked up again. And so, yes, we did actually publish a report in 2016, the one that you mentioned, but it's research that I've continued. So it's definitely near and dear to my heart.
I like the phrase resume tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to steal that.
You can steal it.
So there were some stats in here that were kind of interesting to me, and I think one of those being that if the unemployment rate continued to stay low, the national voluntary turnover rate would stay very high. And that at the end of, I think, well, it's still at the end of, here in 2018, there are more than 5.6 million unfilled jobs in the U.S., primarily for skilled roles?
Yes.
So was that surprising, or surprising that it continued to sort of remain the same over the last 2 years for you?
So we first published this chart in 2009 in the Deloitte Review, which if you go back to Deloitte.com, you can find old issues of the Deloitte Review. And the article is called Where Did Our Employees Go? And we showed this correlation. It's a very strong correlation between voluntary turnover and unemployment using publicly available data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So we charted from January 2001, obviously then till 2009, and then I picked it up again in 2016 when I published this current report. And actually, as I was telling you earlier, I've actually then continued to look to see if it's stayed the same, if the trend has stayed the same. But if you think of an X, as voluntary turnover goes up, unemployment goes down. And it's literally, the correlation is very strong. It's a negative correlation, but it's 0.96. And for those of you who know anything about statistics, anything that a correlation that's that high is actually simply amazing. So why? Why do people feel more comfortable leaving their jobs when unemployment is low? It's because they feel safer. When unemployment is high, people don't feel safe to leave their current employer, and so they won't. But that's that resume tsunami, that once the economy turns around and people, unemployment's low, people feel safe to look and leave. And so that trend continues till this day.
I think that I just find that so interesting. And then the idea that as you move through the report, you begin to talk about the average cost per hire by organization in order to get to, you know, the cost of that voluntary turnover to these organizations. And do you remember sort of putting the paper together and the research continues to go? Because, you know, at Career Crossroads, Jerry and I have countless conversations with our members about their cost per hire, their CPH. And it's always an interesting discussion about what goes into that. Does it include cost of labor? Does it include advertising? Does it include events? Across the board? And it usually varies, pretty wildly. Although there is some consistency for a few baseline items. And I know that there's an ISO standard for cost per hire that was done by SHRM and the American National Standards Institute. And we'll link to that on the website. People can get to it. But as I was looking through the data that you have pulled together, do you have anything high level, or do you know anything high level top of mind as sort of what these organizations were doing when you guys came up with the averages?
So I had actually argued with the study's architects that we should use the SHRM definition, and they wanted to use the same definition that they had used the last time so that they could compare cost per hire from 2011 to 2015. So that's the one we went with, but it's actually fairly close to SHRM, and I think in the future that's what we're using. So I definitely agree that folks should be looking at that SHRM definition, because the reason why organizations and even business units within organizations have different costs for hire is because they include different categories. And so I can tell you what we included in our cost for hire. We defined it as the annual spend for talent acquisition divided by the number of new hires brought into the organization. And our spending included internal staff compensation, so that's, you know, what the recruiters cost, job sourcing costs, pre-hire assessments, background checks, eligibility to work and drug testing expenses, so sort of all of that hiring, those hiring costs. Then you've got travel expenses for both candidates and recruiters, employee referral awards, recruitment process outsourcing fees if the organization's using an RPO, and then recruiting systems and technology costs, probably the biggest area of spend. And then your non-labor related office costs, recruiting contractor costs, and marketing expenses. So we tried to be very broad in what we included. And I'm thrilled to hear that our numbers for cost for hire match yours very closely.
Yeah, it is. It's they're not that far off. And that's as recent as, to be honest with you, that's as recent as in with just the last few weeks, some conversations we've been having with members that the cost per hire for executive within hundreds of dollars. So that's pretty interesting. So I think it's really pretty fascinating that stuff remains constant, even though some of the calculations that go in there are a little interesting. It does bring us to the idea of, I think there was a comment made inside the paper that a large percentage or majority percentage of the executives that were included in your research said that voluntary turnover, they thought, would increase their company's productivity, which sort of was, that did not seem instinctual to me. I felt like that is absolutely not the anticipated response from executives. Can you talk a little bit about that? Were you as surprised as when you discovered it as when I read it in your paper?
Oh my goodness. So first of all, that statistic is from a few years ago, but yes, we were shocked when we got that result. Back during the latest recession, Deloitte was actually interviewing organizations about how they were treating their employees during the recession in 2008 to 2010 or whenever that sort of ended. And we asked the executives in the survey what they thought would happen if more people left their organization. And literally our jaws hit the floor when we saw that 66% of them thought that people leaving would increase their profitability. So that led us to create to really delve into, well, why is this? And, you know, God bless them, but the bean counters don't really care about retention. And I had to try to figure that out for myself because I was so annoyed. So what we realized is that when the bean counters, let's just call them that affectionately, look at the cost of voluntary turnover, they're looking at the direct cost to replace an employee. And they're looking at what they save in labor costs, those interim reductions in labor costs. So if you have a manager who leaves and it takes you 3 months to replace them, yes, you do have costs to replace them. But it also, you've got 3 months where you don't have to pay them. And so you've got that interim reduction. And when we looked at this through most organizations, that the direct cost to replace someone was less than the interim costs of labor. So bean counters, yeah, of course, it increases their profitability. And so we knew that was wrong because it just doesn't make any sense. And we said, well, what if you measured the productivity of losing that manager for 3 months? And then adding the lost productivity into the calculator. So we created a calculator that looks at the total cost of voluntary turnover per exiting employee, but we included the lost productivity costs. There are other intangibles that could have been included. You could have included things like lost client relationships, could have included lost institutional knowledge. You could have included the sunk cost of all the training that person had received over the years. We didn't. We just added the lost productivity. And all of a sudden, the number looks a lot more frightening because it's tangible.
Yeah, I would say frightening is an understatement for some of these, especially when you consider, and I think it's even called out towards the end of the report, but you consider just the smallest change in percentages can be, you know, over $1 million worth of, you know, savings or $1 million worth of earnings.
Yeah, well, Burson does a lot of benchmarking, and so we had benchmarked cost per hire. We also benchmarked the average voluntary turnover, and at the time of the report, it was 13%. And so if you even can bring that number down by 1%, like you said, you can save millions of dollars a year. And so my challenge to anyone who wants to say that retention isn't important is asking them what they're measuring.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good call out. I think that it's interesting to me. I mean, this is ongoing. It's interesting to me. This is obviously ongoing research, but there's a calculator and these calculations that are built into the report that are, if nothing else, a really great way to start some conversations internally and talk about that.
Right, and if your organization's able to monetize lost institutional knowledge, lost client relationships, all the better. Your number will just get bigger, I promise.
Well, and there's also an interesting aspect of that, you know, it's not a promotion. The research is not a promotion of, oh my God, make sure that you hold on to everybody and you don't let anybody go. Because there is some value in letting, let's be honest, there's some value in letting some folks go. Not all of those departures are a bad thing for the business. And, you know, it's also a way, it's also definitely a way to bring in new blood into the organization and innovation into the organization too.
Exactly. Because not all voluntary turnover exits are regrettable. And some amount of voluntary turnover allows you to bring new employees in with innovative ideas and additional diversity. So definitely don't agree. I actually think I agree with the GE model of Jack Welch's getting rid of the bottom 5% every year. I'm sort of a fan of, you know, you need turnover. And so that's one way to do it.
Robin, I feel, this is Jerry Crispin, I felt compelled to kind of insert for the moment. One of the things I did many years ago when I was working at Johnson & Johnson was to take for one of the major companies the monthly sales of every single territory. There's about 120 territories in the United States for one of the major companies, and look at whether or not it was filled or not filled by a person. So there's turnover, obviously. And typically that turnover lasted between 3 and 6 months before that would come back. So that was pretty much average. But I could show what the loss was, and that literally calculate for the corporation what the loss was for keeping a territory empty over the course of a period of time and how long it took to get it back. So it wasn't just the loss in sales that started to get diluted by the company, but also how long it took for a new salesperson to come back and bring it back to its current level. And the aggregate of that for having like 3 or 4% of the territories open at any point in time added in those days to the tens of millions of dollars. And I found that extraordinary. And you're really raising that same kind of issue that we need to find a better measure for what the impact is for when we lose people.
Exactly. I'll even tell you that in some of the organizations I've looked at, they've actually tried to keep open headcount on the books to keep them their bottom line in the black. And all I want to say is, yes, you may have kept your numbers in the black because you didn't have to spend money on salaries and, you know, labor costs, but think of all the productivity that was not achieved. So it's like cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, so I know this is a passion of yours. It's ongoing research, part of the PhD work that you've done. Where can listeners get a copy of this? Where can they grab this document at?
So this document was actually licensed by Vizier, and so there's a link that we can provide you. It's available on the Vizier website. And you're also welcome to check out Deloitte.com for the Deloitte Review in 2009. We also have a new Deloitte Review article coming out in July of 2018, looking at internal mobility, which is one of my new passions, as a result of our high impact talent acquisition survey, which we'll talk about more in the webinar.
I cannot tell you how excited I get that people are actually really beginning to take internal mobility seriously. And you know, hopefully we're seeing a definite shift in the treatment of candidates, internal candidates, and we continue to see the rise in, or the, you know, the elevating of that candidate experience for internals. I make the joke that when at a large organization, way too often we find that it's a switch in the relationship. The relationship immediately changes after someone becomes a member of the company, and it's like, you know, Robin, you know, once we got married, you forgot my birthday and I quit going to the gym, and you know, we just sit on the couch and, you know, we Netflix with no chill. So it's sort of a frustrating sample to sort of see, and it's great to see somebody shining a light on it.
Can I just add one thing, Chris, before you go to your next point?
Yeah.
I actually am starting to think that maybe the reason why organizations' internal mobility programs don't work is because talent acquisition isn't at the table. And I will explain more about that when we talk during the webinar, but talent acquisition has not been part of the conversation around internal mobility, and it needs to be.
I couldn't agree more. Way too often, I think that the senior leadership unfortunately takes an approach of, and I'm using air quotes here, but empowering employees to take control of their own careers. And the frustration that comes from that, at least in my experience and anecdotal conversations I've had, is employees don't know how to find their next internal move. It's just so much easier to leave. So some of the research you're doing that kicks that out. You've got high impact talent acquisition. So HITA.
Yeah.
It's going to be a deep dive look at your latest research into that. And that sounds like it sparks some of this piece, but We're going to do a webinar on June 1st, and we'll put the registration link up on the site at careercrossroads.com. People can get into that. But talk to me a little bit about, if you can, at a high level, what we could expect to hear on that webinar from you.
So first of all, it's very exciting because we interviewed through an online survey over 1,200 people, 1,220, and only 55% of those were in the Americas. So that means that 45% were in APAC and EMEA. So we have very global data. We also had a cross distribution of organizational size, across distribution across industries. And we had a really good 55% of the respondents were from HR, 18% were from TA. Thank you very much to your members who may have participated in the survey. And actually, over 50% of the people who took the survey were director and above, over 70% were manager and above. So it's really, we really feel like we have the best of the information that we've ever gathered around talent acquisition. We found six, we're calling them key findings. As you know, we're a consulting firm, so you've got to talk about how many things you found. But I'll be happy to share those findings with you then during the webinar, as well as to introduce the new talent acquisition maturity model. The first talent acquisition maturity model was published in September of 2014. And some of the questions that we asked in our most recent survey weren't even asked in that last survey. You can imagine things like, you know, around AI and, you know, what sorts of predictive data were you using? So we have a new talent acquisition maturity model, which I'll be happy to introduce as well.
Good stuff. Well, Robin, you are a friend, an industry colleague. You are always a delight to connect with, whether it is here or at some crazy restaurant in Paris. But I want to thank you for taking a little bit of time out to sort of talk to me and our members. And I look forward to the webinar on June 1st. It's going to be fun.
I can't wait. That'll be fun. Thanks so much, Chris and Jerry.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Career Crossroads. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And for more great content and to stay up to date, visit careerxroads.com, facebook.com, and twitter.com/careerxroads. We'll catch you next time.